This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio, filling in for Yahya Suhaib, and here's what's coming up.
In fact, as I talk to you, there's a big team in Nairobi of South Sudan, different teams that are negotiating their issues in Nairobi to have elections and to secure their country.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto talking about his government efforts to bring peace to South Sudan. He was speaking in an exclusive VOA interview. Also, South Africans head to the polls next week, and we hear from the latest top world sports news. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The African National Congress has been governing South Africa since 1994, when Nelson Mandela was elected president following the end of apartheid. But as voters get ready to go to the polls on May 29th, the party known for its opposition to apartheid faces dissatisfaction from some citizens who feel the party has not delivered on its promises. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has the story.
On the streets of Johannesburg, posters of candidates are displayed all over the city. One voter tells VOA he wants continuation and will cast his ballot for the African National Congress. Another one says he's had enough and will vote for the Democratic Alliance.
30 years of democracy is probably 30 years of policy. We need another 30 years of implementing those policies and seeing them coming through to fruition.
Because they're all about change. Enough is enough. We've had enough of the empty promises.
Daryl Glazer, associate professor at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, says it's going to be the closest election since the era of inclusive democracy began in South Africa in 1994.
All the opinion polls are suggesting that there's a very serious chance that the ANC is going to fall below 50% of the vote, and that it's going to be forced into some kind of coalition.
Glazer and other analysts have told VOA that allegations of corruption, scandals, and disunity within the ANC have helped the opposition gain ground, including the Economic Freedom Fighters Party led by Julius Malema, a former ANC youth leader, and the newly formed Umkhonto Wesizwe Party, which former President Jacob Zuma has been campaigning for.
Well, Jacob Zuma's party, Umkhonto Wesizwe, or MK, has been a completely unexpected surprise. I mean, it arrived on the scene quite late in the run-up to the election and completely scrambled everything. The EFF certainly appeals to a certain audience, and it's been growing. In some ways, MK is as much a threat to the EFF as it is to the ANC, if not more so, because it's capturing some of the discontented.
9 days before the election, South Africa's top court ruled that Zuma was not eligible to run for parliament because of a past criminal conviction. The ruling came 2 days after Zuma told thousands of supporters at the rally in Soweto that his MK party would help ease joblessness, among other issues, if it won. South Africa's unemployment rate has reached 32%, according to the World Bank, making it issue number one for many of the voters. Nearly half of the country's 62 million people have registered to vote, says Thabo Masemola, an independent electoral commission official, and he says they are prepared to manage the vote efficiently, as they've done historically.
The certified voters' roll is currently sitting as 27.7 million. And we use the voters' roll as the basis to prepare and plan for elections. So all the relevant election material in place.
He says the IEC has accredited 160 organizations, both domestic and international, to observe the election and ensure its transparency. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Still in South Africa, a party led by a former president aims to deal a blow to the governing African National Congress in next Wednesday's election. Jacob Zuma was once an ANC stalwart. Now he is vowing to destroy the party he went to prison for in the 1960s and 1970s. Darren Teller brings us the latest installment of our look at the major parties competing in the May 29th election.
The Umkhonto weSizwe, or MK party, angered the African National Congress from its inception late last year when it annexed the name of the ruling party's military wing. MK, or Spear of the Nation, played a lead role in overthrowing apartheid. Much to the dismay of the ANC, its 82-year-old former leader and liberation fighter, Jacob Zuma, is the face of the fledgling party, even though the country's constitutional court has ruled a previous criminal conviction prevents him from holding a parliamentary seat. President Cyril Ramaphosa ousted Zuma as head of the ANC in late 2017, blaming him for leading a criminal class within the party. But under Ramaphosa, says Zuma, the ANC has been captured by white capitalists and a black elite out of touch with struggling black South Africans. He was accused of the very same when he was president between 2009 and 2018. At a recent rally in Durban, Zuma said MK will bring honor back to governance. Yet Zuma's presidency was tumultuous, characterized by infighting in the ANC, corruption scandals, and mismanagement at state-owned enterprises. In early 2021, Zuma refused to testify at an inquiry investigating graft during his term. He was later sentenced to 15 months in jail for contempt of court, but was freed on medical parole after serving just 2 months. Zuma's initial imprisonment ignited riots that left hundreds dead. Zuma denies any wrongdoing and has not been charged with any crime related to his time as president. However, a court recently ordered him to stand trial on corruption charges related to an arms deal in the mid-1990s. Even so, Zuma remains popular, says political analyst Franz Cronier.
We are not a corner of Western Europe. We are an African emerging market. And while the chattering classes over the almond lattes cannot comprehend that it's possible that anyone would support Mr. Zuma, he has very strong favorability scores in a lot of important political constituencies in the country.
Cronier says many South Africans simply like Zuma. He talks like them, makes mistakes like them, and stays true to his traditional Zulu roots, not mimicking Westerners as many politicians do. Gabriel Macon of South Africa's Social Research Foundation says MK poses a significant threat to the ANC and could be responsible for unseating the ruling party for the first time in Zuma's home region of KwaZulu-Natal. Macon recently led a pre-election survey of thousands of people in the province.
Amongst black voters in KwaZulu-Natal, Jacob Zuma and Nelson Mandela were seen equally as positively. Jacob Zuma, the most favorable politician by a long way in KwaZulu-Natal. And the vast majority of voters in KwaZulu-Natal also agreed that the way that the ANC had treated him after he was removed from the presidency was unfair. And so there is a huge amount of love for Jacob Zuma in the province, but also there is a huge amount of anger, I think, against the ANC for the way that they've treated him.
MK pledges to create 5 million jobs in sectors such as mining and agriculture, improve healthcare by building hospitals, and roll out massive infrastructure projects to further industrialize South Africa. But, as Cronier points out, MK doesn't explain how it will achieve all this. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
5 Sahel nations have been holding a major military drill in western Niger, the country's defense minister said on Sunday. The French news agency AFP says 5 nations, Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Niger, and Togo, have since last Monday been holding a large national exercise at the Special Forces Training Center. The exercise, which is due to run through June 3rd, marks the first joint military exercise involving the 5 countries, which increasingly are turning away from military agreements with Western nations. The Sahel region has been plagued for years by rebels linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State Group. Military governments in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger have ended military agreements with France in the past few years. Niger also has negotiated with the United States to end the deployment of U.S. troops there by the end of the year. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Kenyan President William Ruto tells VOA that his decision to send 1,000 police officers to help maintain peace in Haiti will not affect Kenyan security missions elsewhere. As he wrapped up his visit to the United States on Friday evening, Ruto sat down with VOA Swahili service reporter Huba Abdi to talk about how his country is working to help other East African countries that face security issues. Ruto also discussed ongoing talks in Nairobi to unite the South Sudan government and opposition groups for lasting peace, as well as regional efforts to broker peace between Sudan's warring generals, Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and Rapid Support Forces Commander Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo.
We have 5,000 troops in Somalia for the last 12 years. We have supported DRC. We are working with South Sudan. In fact, as I talk to you, there's a big team in Nairobi of South Sudan, different teams that are negotiating their issues in Nairobi to have elections and to secure their country. As late as last weekend, we had also teams from Sudan itself, again working towards their peace. So, and we have 15 other countries where Kenya has missions to support peace and security. So Haiti is not an isolated case. The same way we have deployment now in 15 other different countries, including, by the way, in DRC. We have troops under MONUSCO in DRC. The fact that we have troops elsewhere tells you that Haiti should not be an exception. And the same way we believe in peace and security in our own country and in all the other 15 countries, we also believe that we should support the people in Haiti by deploying and leading the deployment.
From Haiti now to Sudan, what are the regional efforts or Kenya efforts in bringing peace to Sudan? And do you still talk to Hemedi and Burhan?
Precisely. We have a robust engagement, and as I have told you, in the Sudan, I had the former prime minister in Nairobi, together with others who are not signatories to the Juba Peace Agreement. They have now signed what they called a Nairobi Agreement to bring together different teams of civil society, of political parties, to be able to think about how they can add the impetus to stopping the war in Sudan and providing a mechanism that eventually will install a civilian administration in Sudan. So those efforts are underway, and we have taken the very firm position that the same way Kenya took a position, IGAD also took a position that we must talk to both sides. We must talk to the Al-Burhan, the SAF side. We must talk to the RSF side, because in peacemaking, you don't talk to friends. You talk to enemies. That's how to make peace. And therefore, we have to talk to both sides. I think when IGAD asked both sides to come for an IGAD meeting, Hemedi showed up. Burhan showed up in one meeting. And then in the next meeting, Hemedi showed up. When Hemedi showed up, the other side says they are pulling out of IGAD because the other side showed up. It is the only way we are going to make peace. This is not the time for sides to decide who talks to who. This is the time for the sides involved in the carnage, in the destruction, in the killings that are going on in Sudan. This is the time for the sides to stop. And they should be the last ones, you know, trying to point fingers this way or that way. We want them to come to the table. We want them to participate in a process. We believe that there is no military solution to the challenge and to the problem we have in Sudan.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto speaking with VOA Swahili Service reporter Huba Abdi here in Washington. If you ask the U.S. presidential candidates who is the most religious, chances are both would say, I am. VOA senior Washington correspondent Caroline Pursuti looks at the attitudes and practices of President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump toward matters of faith.
For some, like voter Trey Mullins, attending a Donald Trump rally is like going to church.
My faith in Jesus is very important, and I know there's a leader, Donald J. Trump, who was already president, who did a great job when he was in office, who's coming back and will reinstate those values.
The former president's comments on religion,
God is here and God is watching,
resonate with evangelicals and other conservative Christians.
We will protect Christians in our schools, in our military, in our government.
Thomas Isbell sells Trump memorabilia at campaign rallies. He points to a T-shirt.
The God, Guns, and Trump, that's probably one of my best-selling shirts and has been for the last 2 or 3 years or so.
But Trump is far from the typical conservative Christian. The former president has been divorced twice. He's being tried on felony charges of falsifying business records, records linked to hush money payments to an adult film star with whom he allegedly had sex. It's one of several court cases which analysts like Robert P. Jones of the Public Religion Research Institute say Trump uses to compare himself to Jesus, whom Christians believe died for the world's sins.
Trump has actually borrowed that language lately. We've seen him saying, I'm being indicted for you.
This Bible is the King James Version.
He is not a regular churchgoer, but on his Truth Social platform promoted a Bible for sale. An Associated Press poll showed 8 out of 10 white evangelical Christians chose Trump in the last presidential election. A Pew Research Center survey this year showed black Protestants preferring Biden. Whether it's a Saturday night or a Sunday, President Joe Biden attends Catholic Mass, typically here in Delaware where he has a house, or in Georgetown if he's in Washington. To that, his supporters can relate. Campaign volunteer Peter Sullivan says he can relate to that.
He went to an all-boys Catholic high school, was fairly serious about his Catholicism. He spoke my language.
Biden and the First Lady met with the Pope at the Vatican in 2021. Pope Francis told Biden, the nation's second Catholic president, he could continue receiving Holy Communion, despite his views on abortion. Biden's abortion stance makes it complicated for some Catholics. In fact, the poll from the last election showed Catholics split 50-50 between Trump and Biden. Ara Streitman is an Ohio voter.
Well, the number one thing is the pro-life issue. It's been disgusting watching Joe Biden proclaim himself as a Catholic and not standing for preborn citizens of our nation.
When Biden talks religion, he speaks of inclusion.
A universal message of hope, of joy, of love. Whether you're Christian, whether you're Jewish, Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, or any other faith, or no faith at all. It speaks to all of us as human beings who are here on this earth primarily to care for one another.
Overall, Biden practices his faith traditionally, while Trump suggests God is present in his life. Caroline Pursuti, VOA News.
And now my colleague Mike Hovey gives us a wrap of the biggest sports news over the past few days.
Sporty greetings, Africa News Tonight listeners. We kick off our weekend roundup with some football action. English football giants Manchester United over the weekend wrapped up their 2024 season by winning the FA Cup after defeating their rivals Manchester City 2-1. Included in the players that were applauded for their performance was a Cameroonian goalkeeper Andre Onana, 19-year-old English sensation Kobbie Mainoo, and Alejandro Garnacho, an Argentine winger. In other football-related news, Egyptian giants Al Ahly were once again crowned the kings of African football. This after the North African team defeated Tunisia's Esperance Sportive de Tunis 1-0 in the finals of the Total Energies CAF Champions League, which was played in Cairo on Saturday evening. Al Ahly's only goal of the match was a result of an own goal scored by Roger Aholu, a defender for Esperance Sportive de Tunis. In the United States, Zambia's Barbara Banda scored 2 goals over the weekend to help her U.S. Women's National League-based team, Orlando Pride, win 2-1 in a clash against Portland Thorns. Banda now has 8 goals in 6 matches that she has started. Now to head over to some basketball-related news. The fourth season of the Basketball Africa League, BAL, continues today after several playoff games that started in Kigali, Rwanda, on Friday. Al Ahly Libya, BAL debutants, and South Africa's Cape Town Tigers are the two teams who have currently secured qualification to the semifinals. Al Ahly Libya played on May 25 and shocked pundits after knocking out the defending champions, Egypt's Al Ahly. As for Cape Town Tigers, they played a competitive match against Fus de Rabat, another debutant team from Morocco. The game ended in overtime with a close 91-88 victory for the South Africans. Nigeria's Rivers Hoopers and Tunisia's US Monastir are currently playing each other to determine who will be advancing to the next stage of the tournament. In a later match, we'll see Senegal's AS Douan play against Angola's Petro de Luanda. The BAL semifinals are scheduled for May 29. For updates on more sports-related news, visit voaafrica.com or follow us on Twitter and Instagram at VOA Africa. You can also subscribe to our YouTube page at VOA Africa. Mike Ove, VOA News, Washington.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Human Rights Watch is urging the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo to investigate alleged extrajudicial killings after a thwarted coup attempt on May 19th. Armed men attacked the home of the government minister before moving on to the nearby Palais de la Nation that houses President Félix Tshisekedi's offices in the capital, Kinshasa. The French news agency AFP says around 40 people were arrested and 4 killed. The plot was led by Christian Malanga, a Congolese man DRC authorities said holds American citizenship. Human Rights Watch says security forces killed Malanga in unclear circumstances hours after the attackers clashed with the military near the Palais de la Nation. U.S. officials have said they cannot confirm that Malanga had American citizenship, but it is concerned about reports that other American citizens took part in the attack. The U.S. State Department has said it is cooperating with the DRC in its investigations.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Tiang Wang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.